Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And as always on Mondays, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, motorcycle, RV, boats. You want to make sure everything that's important to you is fully insured. They'll do that and save you money. It's all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com, and we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. I will start with this, and then we'll get to Matt's rants of the weekend, of which I'm sure there are many.
Bingo!
See what happens when the head coach doesn't overrule the offensive coordinator? We give you Miami Hurricane football.
And that would be an example of, yes, the head coach should intervene.
Yes.
That is a classic example of that being okay.
Did Nick Sirianni lose his game?
No.
Okay. I rest my case. We can move on now. That's why you've got the big office. All right. So, that's the second time it has happened under Mario Cristobal. You know that? He was at Oregon. They were playing Stanford. And they got a first down late, and they just needed to take a couple of knees to get out of there. They ran another play. They fumbled. Stanford recovered. Stanford scored. Stanford beat him in overtime. It's the second time he's done that.
Why does he still have a job? I mean, seriously.
Well, I don't know. Why do we still have jobs?
We're not the ones blowing leads and pulling off two Miracle at the Meadowlands in our tenure. I mean, that's impressive.
It's first of all, he's not the head coach at Oregon any longer. So one happened at Oregon, one happened here. And I don't know what they were trying to do. I don't know if they were trying to get more points to make it look more impressive. If they were trying to get the running back at 99 yards, I don't know if they were trying to get him 100. He was asked about that, says no, okay. But it doesn't make any sense. It just makes no sense. But, you know, you've won the game, and you've been given. I mean, what they've now done is they've reinforced to every coach across the country, take a knee and get out of there. I mean, if the Joe Pisarcik Larry Zonka play doesn't do it from way back when, nothing will. And I just, it's bizarre. And your job is to manage the game, and you get to a certain point, part of managing the game is to take a knee and get the heck out of there. And didn't do it. And it cost him. And then his defense cost him on top of it. But see, every once in a while, the head coach needs to overrule the offensive coordinator. I know you're not a believer in that.
That would be a classic exception.
Oh, that's not what you said last week. Last week, it was an absolute.
I said in most cases, but there are some exceptions, this being one of them.
What if Hurts threw an interception?
As I said last week, I guess I'd rather that than...
You'd rather what? Your best player is your kicker. He's the best player on the team. It's the most reliable player you have. It's all right. Felt he could win it in overtime. So they did. Did they win it in overtime?
They did, yes.
Then he wasn't wrong. Like, James Franklin laughs about this all the time. He says, every time we run a fourth down play and we make it, what a great call. He says, every time we don't make it, it's horrible. You should be thrown out. I said, so you've listened to Matt on the show.
Oh, my almighty!
Right, so what are your other rants besides that?
Staying in college football,
yes.
Another strike for me against Marcus Freeman. Not only was the second half against Louisville embarrassing, but then what he said after the game. I get he's always like a blame it on me type of coach. I'm perfectly fine with that. I respect that in most cases, but I think he went a little over the edge by saying guys weren't prepared for whatever reason. What? Guys weren't prepared? How can this still be happening this point of the season? If this was just him trying to take the blame, then don't say that. Just say we got to do a better job and put him in a better spot. All right, I can live with that. I don't like it, but I can live with that. But then when you start saying guys weren't prepared, quote, for whatever reason, what confidence is that supposed to give me that you're doing your job correctly? Especially when I've seen twice now already in big games where you've had 10 guys on the field in key points of the game. And now suddenly guys weren't prepared, quote, for whatever reason in another national game on the road, prime time. And guess what? You got another one this week with USC and Caleb Williams coming to town. I have zero confidence in this coaching staff. I zero confidence in this coaching staff.
Well, not only that, against a coach and Jeff Braun. I tell you right now, I've done a few Jeff Braun games in my career. That guy, let's just keep it on offense. On offense, that guy can coach. He runs some great stuff offensively. Really does. This week you got Caleb Williams. Uh-oh. I heard he's pretty good.
Just a little.
He wasn't very good the other night against Arizona. I mean, he actually struggled, as did USC in that game against Arizona Saturday night. I watched some of it. It's like, you're like, he's like, okay. No, everybody's going to have one of those. But he was okay. Saturday night. But now you're prime time, NBC, the whole country is going to watch this. It's interesting how the Notre Dame schedule's played out a little more difficult than people really thought it might. Let's face it, when you're sitting there before the season, do you expect Duke to be a threat?
Not as big as they were, but I didn't think that was a cakewalk.
Did you expect Louisville to be a threat?
That I can say I flat out did not.
No, neither team people thought would be a threat. They all thought Duke would be good. You know, they had a good year last year. They went to a bowl game last year. Okay, so they're going to be good, especially down there. But Notre Dame's better. Notre Dame had to fight its guts out and pull it out at the end to win. And the other night, to be honest with you, Louisville did something I never expected. They beat Notre Dame up in the trenches. And the alt kid, who's like supposed to be a first-round pick, he was not good the other night. He's supposed to be a first-round draft pick. Wow. He was not good. And that, if I'm a Notre Dame fan, that bothers me. Like, why is he struggling? He's the last guy on offense. I mean, the last guy, running back, quarterback included. He's the last guy on offense you expect to struggle. Is him, and he really struggled the other night. And he didn't struggle because they sent multiple guys at him. He was beaten one on one. But hey, you got USC this week. You're good. You'll be fine.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
I mean, here's the problem you're going to have with USC. USC has the ability to score because they do have a legitimate, with a really a terrific college quarterback. They can score. The problem is that USC is not very good defensively, but I don't think Notre Dame's good enough to get enough points against them.
That's my exact thoughts on this game.
I mean, Notre Dame will get some points because USC defensively is really... Yikes. I mean, they did turn the game around a bit because they picked off a pass. It was just a bad pass by a kid making, I don't know, what, his second start? And he got off to a great start, but then he threw one. He's supposed to throw it to the outside, and he threw it inside. It was an easy pick, and it was a pick six. That got you, it was 17-0 at the time. It got USC back in the game. But it was interesting on a night where, now some of these points were scored in overtime. But on the night where they gave up 41, USC's like, hey, our defense really won it for us. I'm like, okay. Yeah. I mean, after it was 17-0, they really did shut them down. They only scored 11 points until they finally got to the end and tied the game up. They tied it. I think the game was 35-35, I think. But, yeah. So, yeah. So you don't like your coach?
No.
He speaks highly of you.
I was okay, not totally enamored with the hire. In the first place.
Who's you want to hire?
I just wanted somebody with more experience. I can't remember who they were considering at the time, but I just wanted somebody with more experience as a head coach. And didn't really get off on the right foot with me. Then I started to believe in him a little bit, but now he's taken a major step backward these last few weeks.
Yeah, when you're disorganized, that's a big problem. You know, that's why I look back on, I was watching a little bit of Wyoming-Fresno State, and Wyoming won the game 24-19. And a kid for Wyoming at the end, defensive tackle, picks off a pass. Now, they were trying to dump it in the flat, and he picked it off. And he was running with it. And I don't blame him for running with it, because, I mean, and the sex, he's like going, hey, here I go. But you know what you need to do in that situation? Pick it off. Okay, go to the ground. End the game. Go to the ground. These are items I watch every week, James Franklin drumming into his players' heads. How to handle the last play of the game in the end zone. How to handle an interception in the field of play to put the game away. Okay? How to handle kneel down. I mean, they actually go through all of that stuff. Like trying to drum into them over and over again on a weekly basis what they're supposed to do in those situations. Now, they're still 18 to 22, 23, so that doesn't mean they're going to handle it the right way. But you've got an exponentially better chance of handling it the right way if you keep drumming it into their heads. And you're also trying to drum into the heads of the people calling the plays, the coordinators, how they're supposed to call that at the end. Yeah, Miami lost track of it. And yeah, and I don't get 9 minutes to go. Why are you going for it on fourth down in your own territory? That's Marcus. What? I don't get it. And then you look at Texas A&M and all the mistakes Texas A&M made. I mean, what's stunning about the Texas A&M thing is this. This is what people don't realize. This is Jimbo Fisher's sixth year at Texas A&M. At this point, some things should be running along smoothly there, and they aren't. How about those Niners, huh?
Yeah, that was a beatdown in the second half.
A beatdown all night. What do you mean second half? The whole night was like that. Good Lord. That was bad. How about Kevin Givens, baby? Altoona zone, recovering that fumble. Nittany Lion. Big play. Fred Warner created it. Oh, boy, I bet you the Eagles wish they had two linebackers like the Niners have. Whew. Your two guys would be second string to those guys. I mean, those are two good linebackers. You guys won, right? Yeah, that's good.
I thought that was the best win of the year. Was yesterday. Still need to fix the red zone, but that was the best win of the year yesterday.
So they beat a team under 500. That's the best win of the year?
Well, that's just the way the schedule's been so far.
So the best win of the year is over a team that's under 500?
There's still plenty coming, trust me. The second half of the season. The Eagles are taking care of business now, and then we'll see the second half of the season.
They aren't beating that team last night. I can tell you that. They aren't beating that. They play like that, you are not winning. I mean, that was... Oof. They owned it last night. Now, are they going to play that when they play the Eagles? No, they won't. It won't play the same way. But how about that Brock Purdy? Oh, I forgot. He's probably getting too much love for you, right?
No, I think he deserves all of it, to be honest.
He's the last pick in the draft. Hey, look at him. And the Phillies. We got to get to the Phillies here. We're going to talk to Scott Lauber, but Spencer Strider. Ranger Suarez, that's the first time in 2 years the Braves have been shut out at home. How about that? This is the single most dangerous round of the playoffs for a favorite. Because they're best of five. See, that's what makes this round the most dangerous. If it's best of seven, hey, okay, you can get a split, go back, you got some time, the whole thing. Guess what? When it's best of five, you quickly run out of time. That's a problem. Like, the Dodgers are at home tonight. The Diamondbacks kicked the living daylights out of them the other night.
That was stunning.
None of this is stunning. You just need to go out and get a game. Look at, like, the Astros are tied at a game apiece, all right? Did you see who the Twins threw last night? Pablo Lopez. You want to know what's interesting about him? He totally defies analytics. Listen to these numbers. The first time through the batting order, you know what the average is against him? 249. Do you want to know what the batting average is against him the second time through the order? 238. Do you want to know what the average against him the third time through the order? 229. He defies everything. You can't go through the third time of the order. His batting average is lower in the third time of the order. It's the lowest of the three. Because he has multiple pitches with great stuff to go with that fastball. The guy throws, okay? He throws a split in the 90s. Great stuff. But they are batting 229 against him, third time through the order. Third time! Totally defies analytics. Totally. How about those Detroit Lions?
Yes, sir.
No, they're playing great. Playing great. So Phillies, Braves tonight. I mean, the Braves really, it's not a must win, but it's highly recommended. Got Max Fried tonight and Zach Wheeler. Ooh, how about that tonight? I mean, Fried only pitched in 14 games this season.
Want to work for a stable yet growing company? Got it. Want to work for a family-owned business with over 100 years experience in taking care of customers and employees? Got it. Want to work for a leader in selling more cars and satisfying more customers? Got it. Who has all that? SMC Sunbury Motor Company is looking for technicians across all their departments. Whether you're an entry-level technician, an experienced technician, or someone looking for a career change, Sunbury Motors would love to hear from you. They're looking for technicians for their quick lane, car and light truck service, heavy truck service, body shop, and frame and alignment division. You can apply online at sunburymotors.com, in person at our North 4th Street location, or call Todd at 570-286-7746. Your new career of working on Fords, Kias, Hyundais, Western Star trucks, plus anything that fits in the door,
and some things that don't.
Join Sunbury Motors. Your new career is waiting for you.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Prudy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, RV, boat, motorcycle. They may go with bundles, whatever. They'll make sure you're fully insured, and they will also make sure they do everything they can to help you save money. Pros, pros. All at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Phillies and Braves game two tonight. Scott Lauber, Philly Inquirer, now joins us. First of all, welcome back. It's always great to hear you on the other end.
Steve, it's good to be here.
They beat Spencer Strider in game one, and not only that, the first time the Braves have been shut out in 2 years at home. You sat there, watched it. What did you think of it?
It was pretty unbelievable, to be honest with you. I mean, I think if you were to handicap the series before it started, you would have thought, you know, game one was the one that the Braves were gonna win, and win, you know, I don't know, fairly handily because of the pitching matchup and because of the fact that there was no Zach Wheeler in game one or Aaron Nola in game one. You know, the Phillies don't do very much against Spencer Strider. Typically, Braves were coming off a bye and had done pretty much everything that they didn't do last year. They did everything in reverse, really. They held their workouts in the evening to simulate the flow of a game day. They invited fans in to ratchet up the atmosphere a little bit. They brought in minor leaguers to play against so that they could stay sharp. And still, they come out and can't score a run in the first game. You know, I thought the Phillies stole game one. I thought they had a terrific game plan. I thought they found a weakness in the Braves' offense. I thought they found a weakness in exploiting high velocity against the Braves. I thought they found a weakness in exploiting the running game against the Braves. So they had a plan. They executed it perfectly. They won 3-0, and now they are absolutely in the driver's seat in the series. And you have to wonder you know, how much they're also in the Braves' heads as well.
Agreed with that last part. Is this best of five format, is this the most dangerous round of the playoffs for a favorite because of the fact you don't really have time to get back in it?
I think so. I mean, listen, you know, it's probably not a popular opinion among Phillies fans because it's worked to the Phillies' advantage the last couple of years. And it sounds like it's excuse-making on the part of the favorites or the division winners who fall behind in these series. But a bye in baseball is not really an advantage.
Right.
As you know, I mean, in baseball, they play pretty much every day for 6 months straight. You get a brief break during the All-Star break, a three-day break. Otherwise, you're never off more than one day at a time. You're lucky if you get a day off in a week. Sometimes you get a couple. But I think when you don't play for 4 days, you can do as much simulated game as you want. You can do as much you know, preparation as you want. But these guys are – baseball players more than any other athletes are creatures of routine. And I think when you take them out of their routine, even when it's intended to give them rest or to make the road easier, it actually makes it harder. I think it's difficult to kind of end the season on that Sunday and then not crank it up again until Friday or Saturday. The Braves also, unlike the and the Dodgers, I guess, have the same issue now too. Unlike in the American League, not only does the favorite get the 4 days off, 5 days off, but really they also get there's a day off between games one and two. So the Phillies were able to start Zach Wheeler on normal rest, and he'll also be able to pitch game five on normal rest if there is one. So I do. I think it's a little bit unnatural to get the bye. I wonder how baseball fixes it, though, because when you introduce more wild card teams, you need to have a first round as opposed to just that one game.
Yeah.
I wonder whether making the division round seven games instead of five is the answer. Because, you know, it just seemed to me going into game one, and I talked to some colleagues and some people on the field about this before game one, it just felt like for a team that won 104 games and hit 307 home runs and had the highest slugging percentage in history and won its division by 14 games and all of those things, there was an awful lot of pressure on the Atlanta Braves in game one. Mm-hmm. And it felt to me like a team that has a season like that shouldn't have that kind of pressure in the first game. And, you know, you never want to lose the first game, but if it's a best of seven, at least you feel like you have some breathing room. You don't have that in a five game. So I wonder if that's the way to mitigate the issue. And obviously there are issues with having the season go into the second week of November, but it just feels like the division winners ought to be or ought to have a little bit more of a reward than a bye and a home game, extra home game.
There are certain guys that, whatever reason, thrive in this, and they may not be the superstar. Clayton Kershaw's been up and down in this. A guy like John Lester thrived in this.
Yeah.
What is it about Zach Wheeler where he seems to thrive in this? What, you know, because it seems like his heart rate's 45.
Yeah, I think you just said it. I mean, he there's no difference, I can tell you, in being around Zach Wheeler in the postseason as opposed to the regular season. There's no difference in the demeanor, in the attitude, in the preparation, in the routine. And I have to believe that it's not a facade. It's real. It's genuine. You know, everyone likes to say, oh, it's just another game, or postseason is just an extension of the regular season. It's another thing to believe it and to perform accordingly. And I think the Phillies have a number of players, including Zach Wheeler, who do that, who can kind of compartmentalize, you know, the stakes being higher, but also, you know, trying to normalize the situation and figure out a way to get through it. He does that. He pitches really well at home. I'm at Truist Park right now. He was born about 5 minutes away from here. He grew up right near here. He pitches very, very well in his hometown. I think the Phillies have got to be really comfortable with the fact that he's going to the mound today with a chance to give them a 2-0 lead in the best of five series. And you know, the Braves have seen enough of him. They know what to expect. He's got a combination of velocity and just an understanding how to pitch. You know, he added a sweeper, which is a variation of a slider this year, and
right.
given him another weapon to go to. And, you know, I think all you got to do to understand what makes Wheeler so tough is talk to Aaron Nola. Aaron Nola likes to talk about how Zach Wheeler can pitch at 97, 98, or, you know, and overpower you, or he can pitch to you. You know, he can really work you over with some off-speed and secondary stuff, and there aren't a whole lot of guys in the league, including Aaron Nola, that can do that. So, you know, Wheeler's got it all, really, and like you said, the attitude and the kind of the demeanor to succeed in October.
Because every time I hear somebody say, well, you know, it's just like the regular season, same approach, and so forth, I always ask myself, are they trying to convince me or convince themselves?
Right. Right, and Wheeler is not one of those guys, you know, who
right,
gets asked
exactly.
a lot about
yeah.
it. But, you know, he's not one of those guys who walks around saying, oh, it's just the same. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's those guys who are trying to talk themselves into it rather than feeling it. And he definitely feels that it's just, you know, he's able to handle it, and not everybody is.
I do have to ask you about this guy. He's pitching for the Twins, but you saw him pitch with the Marlins for years, and that's Pablo Lopez. There's a stat on him that blew me away. Everybody talks about first, second, and third time through the order. This season against him, first time through the order, they're hitting .249. Second time through the order, they're hitting .238. Third time through the order, they're hitting .229. Really?
Yeah.
This guy defies analytics. Now, you saw him pitch a lot with Miami, but when you hear something like that, what runs through your mind in this analytics world?
Don't you love that? Don't you love that? Because there aren't enough pitchers these days who get the opportunity to go through a lineup for the third time, no less succeed doing it. And look, from an analytics standpoint, it makes sense, right? That
right.
the second time you'd see a pitcher, the third time you'd see a pitcher, your odds of having success against that pitcher goes up, right? That it gets harder for the pitcher the more they see you. What it tells me about Pablo Lopez is that, like Zach Wheeler, I mean, we're talking about a pitcher who can attack you in a lot of different ways. He's obviously showing hitters much different looks the second and third time around.
Yep.
Not the same thing. And so it keeps them, and that to me is pitching. That to me is
yep.
is what pitching is all about, is disruption of a hitter's timing. And how do you disrupt a hitter's timing? You throw different looks at them. You throw different pitches at them. You vary your speeds. You vary your delivery in some cases. So when I see that and I watch a guy like him pitch, I kind of think of a throwback guy, a pitcher who can get you deep in a game. And maybe in Miami all those years, we underappreciated Pablo Lopez because he pitched alongside Sandy Alcantara, and yep. it seemed like, you know, seemed like every year, no matter the season they had, the Marlins had arms that they could throw at you. And look, the Marlins, you know, the Twins, in order to acquire Pablo Lopez, traded the batting champ, Luis Arraez, who
yep.
had a great year with the Marlins. So it tells you that the Marlins and the Twins both understood the value of Pablo Lopez. I also love that trade. I love the fact that it was an old-fashioned baseball trade, good player for good player, and it made both teams better, ultimately. So, you know, I'm sure the Marlins would have loved to have had Pablo Lopez start Game 1 against the Phillies last week, but they also loved having Luis Arraez at the top of their lineup all year.
Right.
So, you know, I think that I think it was a good baseball trade, and he's obviously a really good pitcher.
Yeah, I know it was off topic, but I just thought it was so interesting. All right, so Max Fried goes tonight for Atlanta. We already talked about Wheeler. Fried only, you know, with everything he's gone through this year, he only ended up making 14 appearances. How have the Phillies dealt with him over time?
You know, he's a good pitcher. Kind of reminds me of, like, little Cole Hamels. He's left-handed. He's got really good stuff. Doesn't seem to come unnerved. The Braves' record when he pitches over the years is tremendous. Obviously, some of that has to do with the fact that they're a really good team, and I'll bet their record with most of their starters on the mound is good. But with his, it's really good. It's something like 87-33 or 43, something like that. They're well way over .500 with Max Fried. The question tonight, it's all going to be about his left index finger. He's had a blister on that finger, which developed in his last start in late September. He missed his last two starts. He pitched a simulated game, I think it was Tuesday, here in Atlanta. He said he came through it fine. He's had blister problems in the past, so this isn't new to him. He's dealt with this stuff before, and he's obviously got a handle on how to do it. But the question is not only the quality of the stuff, but it's also how long is it going to is he going to be able to go? Because if he should, you know, if that blister should redevelop or if it should tear, you know, it's not going to be he's not going to be long for the game. So I think everyone's going to be looking to see how his finger responds. But if he's healthy, I think the Phillies have their hands full because he's a really good left-handed pitcher. And you know, like I said, the Braves count on him a lot and play really well behind him. So they're counting on him, though, not only tonight, but also a potential Game 5. They'd have to get there, of course. Mm-hmm. But they're counting on having him pitch twice in this series. And, you know, it's all going to depend on how much, you know, on how healthy that blister is.
Eight pitches, seven sweepers. Orion Kerkering, who, when he was down at the academy, had what was termed a very bad curveball. Well, those seven pitches he threw of the eight were sweepers. What have you seen in this remarkable story?
Yeah, he had what his college coach described as a very bad curveball, and so what they did was they taught him how to throw a slider, and it turns out it might be one of the best sliders in baseball, if not the best.
Yeah.
And I mean all of baseball. You know, it was certainly one of the best pitches in the minor leagues all year. There is a bit of an X factor to this, too. You know, like, there aren't a whole lot of secrets between the Phillies and Braves. They play each other so often during the regular season. But the Braves had not seen Orion Kerkering until Saturday night, not live at least. And, you know, the way he mowed through the bottom of that order in eight pitches, and then, you know, they trust him enough to send him back out to face Acuna to start the eighth. He walked Acuna, but, you know, the fact that they had him in that spot in the first place tells you that it's not just lip service, that Rob Thompson's not just saying, yeah, I trust this guy. He really does trust him. I would expect to see him in leverage spots tonight and then obviously going forward in this series because they're clearly not afraid to use him, and he's got great stuff. But talk about another guy who just seems to be unfazed by it all. I mean, this is somebody who started the season in low A, kind of soared through the system, didn't get to the big leagues until the end of September, made three appearances in the regular season for in the major leagues. Jeff Hoffman calls him the diaper because he's so young and inexperienced, and you wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know it from watching him. And I've talked to people and said, like, can you give me something to compare this to? And the names that people come up with are like David Price in 2008, mm-hmm. came to the big leagues late in the season and was a factor for the Rays in the bullpen in the postseason. Francisco Rodriguez, K-Rod in 2002 with the Angels, started the year and spent most of the year in the minor leagues, came up in late September, was a factor in the postseason. And boy, if the Phillies have that on their hands with Orion Kerkering, it's going to be something to watch for as long as they continue to play in the postseason.
Yeah, I think, what, Kerkering was a fifth-round pick? Something like that.
Yeah,
David Price was first overall. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, and the fact that, you know, those are examples that you get, it tells you that there's really not a – I don't know that there is really a, you know, apples to apples because, like you said, fifth-round pick, start of the year, was not on anybody's prospect list and everything like that. And, it's been a meteoric rise, to say the least.
Yeah, you have players in the field going, we're putting who in? I don't remember this guy from earlier in the year. And by the way, walking Acuna on four pitches is no sin. All right, so...
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Scott, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us from the ballpark today. Really appreciate it.
Of course, Steve, anytime.
The outstanding Scott Lauber, Philadelphia Inquirer. How about that story? The guy's in low A when the season starts. He's on nobody's radar. And I'm watching him the other night. He throws eight pitches, I think it was with the seventh inning. You know, and seven of the eight were the sweepers. That part slider, part curveball. And you're like, they can't touch him. Like, wow. Okay, now walking Acuna on four pitches, perfectly acceptable. So here we are. They've got Wheeler going tonight. Freed goes tonight. in the Yankee series, who are they going with tonight? Did they determine that?
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
So it's TBD?
It's going to be that way for a long time.
Oh, really? So we're going to have to guess every game?
Bingo!
Because I've been going through the dial. I cannot find the Yankees games. What channel are they on?
Golf Channel.
Tonight's game, by the way, TBS. First pitch, 6:07. Also on Eagle, 107. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. You have more rants, don't you?
Oh, I'm not done.
We could run another EAS test.
Well, might as well, because some people didn't get it, which was odd.
I didn't get it.
That's about as good as Marcus Freeman coaching a Notre Dame game right now.
Well, my EAS test was sent by the Miami football coaching staff. No? Not good?
Maybe it might have been that, too. I don't know.
Wow. Whew. How about that Brock Purdy? You know what's great about Purdy? Is like he really has, it comes off as somebody who has no attitude. Like, okay. It's good. Let's go to the next game.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.